Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, very special repeat guest, Kyle Serafin. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Kyle Serafin. Kyle Serafin is an indefinitely suspended FBI special agent and U.S. Air Force veteran. He attended the FBI Academy at Guantanamo in the summer of 2016 and was assigned to the Washington Field Office. While in Washington, D.C., Serafin worked counterintelligence investigations for 2 years before transferring to a specialty surveillance team. Serafin has appeared to speak about corruption and political bias within the FBI on Fox News, Newsmax, and Salem Media TV. He's a regular guest on the Dan Bongino radio show and my first repeat guest on the Mill Creek View podcast, How Lucky Am I? Father, husband, and says Sundays are for God and family. Kyle, thank you for coming on again. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing, Steve? Good to see you
again. Doing great. Thanks for asking. You and Steve Friend, also former FBI and a whistleblower, were both scheduled to be my first repeat guest, but he got subpoenaed to testify in front of the new House Select Committee on Weaponization of the Federal Government with Jim Jordan, Ohio priorities.
He just reached out to me and told me proof of life. He's still alive. He's at Reagan Airport. He's boarding a plane. He's getting out of D.C. And he resigned from the FBI.
He did. All right.
Right in front of him.
So thoughts and prayers for him. And also he's there with Jim Jordan, people of Ohio, the train wreck. So he went from suspended to actually terminated and now officially resigned, and they refused his request to get another job.
He accepted the job. So he went ahead and resigned based on that. So I know we'll get on together and we'll all get a good triple talk here. Steve's a great, fun guest to have because he's very much a yin to my yang in that sort of way.
That's right.
We operate on very different spectrums, but we have the same message, I think.
And it'll be the Steve, and Kyle show. Or if
that's
you
what
guys
I want.
Were an 80s bromance, it could be the Sarah Friend show or something like that.
Ooh,
okay.
Yeah. I dig it.
I'm going to trademark that before you get off the show.
Yeah, you're making Steve sick over there. He said, shut that down. It should be Steve. It should be S cubed.
There you go.
And K. That's what it is.
And K. S cubed and K. All right. That sounds like a designer gene or something, but how is it even possible that they can consider that not retaliation by not letting him get a job?
Oh, it is. It's retaliation. It's retaliation on every level. They said he had to get a job that they were going to pick what they wanted. You know, if I ask for permission, I just don't ask for permission anymore because I don't work for them. You know, when you stop paying me and I'm 255 days away from being paid at this point, I don't care what the FBI says about me. I'm going to do whatever I want. They terminated my security clearance the other day because I showed up on media appearances and I didn't ask for permission. And it's like, well, you probably shouldn't have put it in writing that I have no duties or responsibilities as an FBI employee anymore because I'm not going to abide by your policies. I don't care what you say. And Steve's the same way. He just went ahead and said that he resigned so they didn't put some nasty disciplinary thing or go into him with, you know, our concern is that there's going to be a criminal case that they try to make. Not that there's a justification for it, but that this process is the punishment attitude is going to be applied to people like him and me and other whistleblowers. And, you know, none of us have any faith that the FBI is operating in good faith. So that seems pretty plausible.
And they want to know if you took top secret documents or sent somebody an email or any of these kinds.
My last name is Serafin. It's not Biden. So I didn't have any of the top secret emails. I got a storage unit. It has no classified documents or any documents of FBI. Cause you know, I had one thing when they came by and actually got my last of my gear. They picked up my body armor from my house. And I said, here's a CD of a case. I don't know what it is, but it was in a binder and it fell out of my stuff. So here you go. And it was from an Indian Country Crimes, which is about the least classified thing there is. And I don't know what was on it either. It was just a CD. And I just said, you know, it maybe doesn't even work. Here you go. That's the last year's stuff. Get off my property. But there's no reason. It doesn't mean that they won't try to come after us because like I said, the FBI is not a good actor in this country right now. It's operating in a very ideological way. And we could see that from the most recent whistleblower disclosure that I helped release.
Yeah, I want to get into that. But before we do, I'm sure you've been following the news of the committee that Steve was just on today. I don't know if you saw today, if it's live or not. But what stands out to you most about Revelations since you lived it and since you were here on January 20th, a month ago, exactly?
The thing that stands out the most is that they bumped people who are actual whistleblowers for people like Tulsi Gabbard and senators and a girl who's not a whistleblower, a woman who's not a whistleblower, whose name is Nicole Parker. So they were the opening statement, and they bumped my buddy Garrett, who is a legitimate whistleblower, who has gone to Congress and lost his paycheck, for people that are not whistleblowers. There's a legal status that the word whistleblower doesn't mean that you just see a problem and you say words. There's an actual process you have to go through. The DOJ, you know, outlines what it is, and you have to report credibly or in good faith on a violation of rule, policy, or law, or gross abuse, fraud, and waste of government resources. And then you have to do it through somebody in the approved chain. And that could be your direct supervisor. It can be the Office of General Counsel. It can be the Office of Special Counsel. It can be somebody who is a staffer or a member of Congress. And so my group of whistleblowers went outside the FBI and pursuant to U.S. Code, which is 5 U.S.C. 7211, says that you can petition Congress. That's what we did. That's why we were authorized to go to Congress under DOJ policy. So we went there and made these allegations. What you saw was is people testifying like Jonathan Turley, and I have nothing against Jonathan Turley or Thomas Baker, who's a retired FBI agent, nothing against them. They're just not whistleblowers. So what in the heck are they talking about? Why are these people the ones being interviewed when the whistleblowers are, one, paying their own way? Steve had to pay his own trip up and down.
Of course.
You know, so that's part one. And part two, they're doing it in closed door hearings. So he was in a closed deposition. And I don't know if it's a tryout that Jim Jordan's office is doing to see if you're good enough for the primetime and in front of the rest of the 5 minute, you know, clown show of theatrical Congress presentations. But that seems like what they do. And they haven't called me yet. That's fine. Either I'm not going to be shown up or they don't need to try out. I don't know which one. But either way, if they do put me in front of it, I'll try to bring some fireworks, because the problem is that the FBI has done some really awful things and you can't talk about it nicely. And you can't accept anybody else talking about it nicely either. It's done bad things. It needs to account. And instead of accounting, it got another $1.5 billion on its budget for this year. So that's
so
not good.
You mentioned one of the guests was Thomas Baker. And I just happened to take a note. I wanted to ask you, there's this book out. Mm-hmm. Maybe you read it. The Fall of the FBI, How a Once Great Agency Became a Threat to Democracy, by former 33-year veteran FBI agent Thomas Baker. Baker presents the FBI as the good, the bad, and the ugly, his own war stories, the Bureau's injustices, and finally its corruption under Robert Mueller and James Comey, unabated under Christopher Wray, another non-agent who doesn't know what hit him or the FBI. Does that book hold true? And how do you feel about Wray and Barr and those guys, you know?
Well, I read the jacket only, so I don't know enough about the book. I would love to talk to Thomas Baker. From his testimony, it sounds like we're probably on the same page for a lot of things. Probably not everything, but that's pretty standard. I mean, I used to deal with guys of his tenure on a regular basis when I was on the surveillance team, because a lot of guys that would come out to do surveillance had 20 to 25 years in the Bureau, and they were kind of at the end of their careers, and they make really good surveillance agents, by the way, because nobody expects the guy with gray hair and, you know, a little bit of a beer gut to be the Fed that they're waiting on. So that's actually a very helpful thing. But I don't know Thomas Baker. What I'm getting at is that they're doing a weaponization hearing, and maybe they were just doing an establishing shot, like they're going to get to the real movie later. But what they didn't do was bring whistleblowers on. And I think that's bizarre when you have a panel of four people and two of them are former FBI agents and neither of them are whistleblowers. That doesn't set the right tone for me, that you are bringing a serious case to the American people that these are the problems. Now, I'm sure Thomas Baker has a very clear idea of what has gone wrong in the Bureau historically. I'm sure that he watched that decay happen from the inside, but he also retired with his pension and he got to walk out on his own terms. That's a big difference than someone like me who got thrown out for doing what I think is the right thing, which exposes, you know, malfeasance on behalf of a federal agency. And I did so according to the law, the way that we were supposed to do it. And it didn't result in a good, the retaliations they're pretty significant and they're not very fun. Like this is a trailer. I'm sitting in an RV right now. It's 60 degrees because I've got an extension cord that runs in and it runs my lights and it runs my camera and my little computer here. So this is a suboptimal condition. It's not like I get to sit in a nice warm house that I own because I sold my house over this, and I would do it 10 times out of 10. But I didn't see the people sitting in front of Congress going through that hardship. I see people like Steve Friend doing it. I see my buddy Garrett doing it. I see people like my producer Phil doing it. And all those things do not lead me to believe that this weaponization committee is serious, because you only get one shot at this. And they're also saying they're expecting to release a report on this in 2025. Like, sorry, that's too late. That's way too long for the American people to have a weaponized FBI. Two more years before we get a findings hearing? No.
Yeah, like, first no, of all, I think you have a good perspective that this is just another Kabuki theater thing. I want to play a clip for you, and then we can talk about this guy. Steve, run that clip real quick.
Would you? Please place your left hand on the Bible. Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Christopher A. Ray.
I, Christopher A. Ray.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
Hold your sound off, Steve.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance to the same.
And allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office.
On which I'm about to enter.
So help me God.
So that was Chris Wray taking the oath of office. It's a 10-year term to be the director of the FBI. And the book that was talking about Mueller and Comey and even Bob Barr, who is attorney general, we know about the current occupant of the attorney general's office. How do you feel about those guys after hearing them swear that oath that I know you take very, very seriously?
I do take it seriously. And I've done it both as you know, the variation that is for the enlisted members of the military. And I've done it as a career federal civil service. So I'll just turn this back on you. How serious do you think someone like Chris Wray is when he swears into a 10-year term and his family doesn't live in DC with him? He didn't even move his family. I picked up everything that I had and I moved outside of DC, even though it's not a fun place to live. And I went there for 5 years and then I got my wife somewhere else with my, you know, now three children. Chris Wray hasn't even inconvenienced himself. He flies back on a private jet to go hang out at his house in Atlanta. And he lives in a, you know, an apartment that is in DC. And he's a geo bachelor for what, 5 weeks or 5 days out of the week. So how serious is that man about that oath? He didn't even inconvenience his family. And I moved my whole life, as does every other FBI agent, by the way. I'm not special in that way, as does every other member of the United States military. They pick up, they move their whole families all the way across the country, sometimes across the world. They go to friendly NATO bases and things like that. They go learn foreign languages. They get stationed in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Like, there is a commitment that comes in when you put your hand up and you swear that oath. I don't see Chris Wray's commitment to it. I think Chris Wray swore an allegiance to a paycheck because he's going to get a really good payout when he goes to a law firm when his term is over, whether that's the full 10 years or shorter, because somebody will pay him for the work that he's done.
He was already a very wealthy man before he got picked out of obscurity to take over for Comey after he was fired. How that all came about, I'll never know. Probably Chris Christie, but oh well. So Jim Jordan.
Yeah, Bridgegate, something or other.
Jim Jordan, he's an elected official. He is head of that committee. It is important. The headline says, rips political DOJ while another whistleblower comes forward, gives transcribed interview. We have a government that now I believe is targeting the very people it is supposed to serve. It is not Jim Jordan saying this. It is not Republicans, not conservatives. It is good, brave FBI agents who are willing to come forward and give us the truth, he said. How many whistleblowers are there, Kyle, and what took them so long to come forward?
I don't know how many whistleblowers there are. The fun thing is that there's several nodes that are operating independent of each other. And so, you know, in my little node, we have 300 people that are ideologically aligned with wanting a non-partisan FBI. That's about all that we have to do. Everyone there happens to be relatively conservative, but that's not entirely the case. We have disagreements about politics. What we do agree on is that the FBI can't weigh in on those politics. So that's my little node. There was another node that was up in New York. I've connected with them via a guy named Kurt Suzdak, who's a retired FBI agent, and he's a lawyer that does whistleblower work. He actually wrote the book, The FBI Whistleblower Handbook, which I probably should have read, but I didn't. And but I am friends with Kurt, so I have that resource. So he had a node of whistleblowers. And there's another node coming out of Washington field office that I probably know, but I don't know explicitly who they are. And then there's some others. So, you know, there are probably a couple hundred in total. But as far as the actual disclosures we're seeing, it's maybe like in the dozen to two dozen range of specific wrongdoing and malfeasance by the Bureau. So, you know, that's what we're out there trying to accomplish. That's the size of the entity. And you know, that constitutes probably, I don't know, 2% of the FBI, something like that. It's not a ton.
Yeah,
it's not a ton of people.
Yeah, Sean Hannity always talks about it's only the top 1%. It's not the rank and file. I think he needs to grow that number a little bit.
Well, but I don't think Sean Hannity knows very many people in the FBI for all of his talk and all of his weird pins that he wears on his jacket. So I'd love to chat with him about it at some point. I'm sure if he does, I'd say, hey, man, you don't need to wear that pin for anybody. Two lapel pins is too many for a grown man. Just one piece of flair is good. But, you know, end of the day, it's not that you can generalize because the FBI is not a monolith. You can't say like, it's only this level of employee. There are individual employees all the way down to the front lines that are garbage and doing garbage work, much like what we'll talk about, I'm sure, with this Catholic document that came out. That was a frontline, probably GS9, GS10, intel analyst. And it was approved by GS14s and then was retracted by people who were embarrassed by it. So, you know, I was a GS13 when I left of 15. There are 15 points in the general schedule of employment. So I was towards the top of the federal pay grade, but I was the bottom of the FBI agents. As a 13, you are the frontline guy. The 14 is a supervisor. The 15 is above you. And then you've got these SES positions, which are all bonus paying, you know, senior executive deep swamp types. So, or deep state rather. So, you know, like it's not one thing. I tried to describe it the other day. You ready for a weird, like a visual metaphor? The FBI is like a giant squid, okay? And it has like five primary arms coming out of its head. And it has 15 smaller arms coming out of its mouth, okay? But all the five big arms all have their own brains because those are all the executive assistant directors. Then all those assistant executive directors, those all break off into 3 to 5 more branches. And those all have their own brains too. And then all of those go off into these tentacles 56 times each. But those tentacles are all organized into these little puddles that are called field offices. And they have their own brain, a brain that's, you know, has to answer to the three other brains that are above it. And so you end up with this absolutely atrocious organization chart, first of all. And the second of all is like in a corporate structure, you would lose your mind. Any analyst would come in from any of these, McKinley type consulting firms, and they would go, you got to scrap your org chart. It's garbage. It doesn't make any sense. Because the FBI agent in the field not only answers to their supervisor and supervisor and supervisor, but also to a program manager in DC that handles the type of crime or intelligence they deal with. And then they're consulted on by these other people that work in the field office that are called intelligence analysts. And they work for the FBI, but they don't answer to the FBI. They answer to another squid that's called the Director of National Intelligence or ODNI. So you've got this like just monstrously weird, you know, mutant hybrid animal that makes no sense anywhere.
It's except the epitome of the Leviathan.
It is. And it's,
which
and
we
it's,
were warned against. Yeah.
It's totally unsustainable as a business opportunity. And then that's what government is. It's just unsustainable weirdness when it comes to organization.
Are 99% of those patronage jobs, or are they actually hard earning patriots who went through the training academy, learned to shoot, learned to solve crimes, do all the things we would hope a investigative bureau would do? Or is it like the post office where they get their jobs because their brother-in-laws are friends?
There's some of that for sure. There's a lot of weird nepotism in all government, I think. But and even though there's laws against it, by the way, that's the funniest part. But it's 36,000 plus employees, like under 37,000, 14 or so, like maybe 13,700 are agents. So that's kind of the breakdown of it. So those are your badge and your gun types. 2/3 of the FBI is administrative type personnel. More and more, they are taking over the leadership and the supervisory roles. And there's this weird push in the FBI right now to move intel analysts into jobs that are formerly only held by agents. And the problem with an intel analyst is that their oath is not the same and their responsibilities are not the same. The obligation that I would have as a gun and badge carrying agent is a much higher duty, because the constitutional law that I'm required to obey is very specific, and my duty to protect the Bill of Rights is different than somebody who shows up every day and writes term papers for a living and then starts telling someone like me what to do. It's why we have some of the problems I think we have, is because the culture has been eroded from, you know, say what you like about Hoover, and I can say plenty of things that are weird about Hoover because he was a weird guy. But he didn't know what the problem was. He may have been a gangster in a very real sense, but he did align more or less with the values of what America is about. And that is not necessarily the case with what we're seeing right now. Now these people they've really sworn an allegiance to themselves. Like I said, I think Chris Ray's allegiance is to his own paycheck and his own future and wealth. And it's the same thing for a lot of these senior executives. Like, they're looking for the next job, How do I move myself in? And then they move either into the information industrial complex in big tech, or they move into the some of the other sort of industrial complexes that just feed off people in government that know how to find the person that writes the check, which is gross.
And we saw them join the new economy with the Twitter and the Microsoft and the Google, and just going right into those executive suites, big time things like James Baker, who was the counsel for Ray, FBI, right into a company like that, which is was a public company at the time, should not have been doing these type of things. Again, illegal. Matt Gaetz, congressman from Florida, firebrand, lots of controversy, but he said during the weaponization of the federal government hearing, "I want to assure you both that we come not to trash the FBI, but to rescue the FBI from political capture." Can it be rescued from political capture?
I don't know if there's the will to do that, but if I were going to do it, I would do it by gutting it in the management, and then I would make everybody else interview for their jobs, which is a difficult thing. It'd probably be an expensive process and you'd hurt a lot of feelings. But essentially, anybody at a GS-15 and above, that's going to be the assistant special agents in charge of the field offices, all the section and unit chiefs of the headquarters units, and everyone above them should be fired. And I'll say it very emphatically, because every single one of them had the opportunity to throw the BS flag on the enforcement of COVID policies, which they didn't choose to do. It doesn't matter what they personally chose to do. There was an injunction in the Fifth Circuit that said they couldn't enforce it. And they tried to find end arounds because the FBI is not interested in doing the process cleanly. They're interested in outcomes. And that is not the federal government's purview. I just did a podcast about that today on my own show. And the answer is the federal government only cares about the clean application of process in theory. But in reality, what it's doing right now is trying to pick winners and losers. It's trying to get the outcome. And that is not what the federal government is designed to do. It's only supposed to protect our civil liberties. So it has no business in what the outcome of the court case is. The court says something and it just says, yes, sir, let's do it. That's the job. That's the job that you swear to. And so if you got a gut 15 and above and everybody 14 and below has to go and interview for their job again, I don't know if anyone's going to do that. Matt Gaetz follows me personally on Twitter now, so that's kind of interesting. He was interviewing my friend Steve Friend today, and I'm glad that he was there. And I, he's hit and miss with me, as I'm probably like any other human being. I don't expect I would agree with anybody 100%, but I do like the words that are coming out of his face right now. He's saying things that make sense to me. I hope they have the political capital, and I hope they have the political fortitude to follow through on these things big time.
Yeah,
because that'd be a big move.
Well, most of the time that you were in office or in your position, an agent, Nancy Pelosi was in charge of the Capitol of the Congress. Now that Republicans are majority for the last 3 weeks, 5 weeks, are you seeing anyone in Congress helping you or defending you more so than you would have seen in the last decade?
Helping me personally?
You and your group, you call them your pods, your fellow brother and sister whistleblowers who have legitimate cause for concern about the illegality and the, let's just call it, corruption of the FBI, helping them rescue it from this political capture, or is it just business as usual up there?
It's probably too early to make a judgment on them. I'm trying to reserve judgment and I'm trying to be patient, which is not my strong suit. I'm an action oriented type of guy. I was a paramedic when I was in the field. So I like to jump to the problem and address it right away. If we need CPR, I don't need to discuss it. We just do CPR. If we need to shock a patient who's in, has a fibrillating heart, then we just defib right there. And in the same way, I would like to see some of that shocking action happen. The answer should be that all of the people that are whistleblowers, like myself and the others, should have their paycheck restored. Steve Friend shouldn't have had to make that choice. We should have our paycheck restored on administrative leave, if that's the decision, and let us wait it out until they adjudicate these things in the very, very long form, potentially multi-year issues that go on. And I would work behind the scenes quietly, and you would have never seen my podcasts, and you would have never seen me pissing anybody off, which I tend to do, because I don't have a vested interest. The only reason that we went public is because it was clear the system doesn't work, so I took it to a different court. If the Merit Service Board is not an effective court, and if the administrative courts of the Equal Opportunity Commission are not going to help me, then I'm going to go to the court of public opinion, and I'm going to share it on shows like yours, on Tucker Carlson. We go the whole gamut. I'll talk to everybody, and I will tell them that the gospel of the FBI is coming after you, and it can't do that. And as you can tell, I'm kind of an evangelist about this. I'm pretty passionate, and I get spun up, and I got a lot of words to say it, and I have a lot of experience to back up what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying anything that's false. If you go interview people that have a lot of time in the bureau, they say the same thing. These are coming from 6 years of conversations around a table on a Friday night, drinking a beer after my team was done, or our squad meetings on Monday mornings. It's a lot of time talking to a lot of people with decades of experience that all see the same problems that I did. But they all got to retire and I didn't, and that's okay. I'm not mad about not having a paycheck, but I am mad about the FBI coming after just regular Americans, you know, parent, Catholics, you name it. I'm all those things. I'm a parent. I'm a Catholic. They can't do it. So I'm going to be loud. I'm going to be loud and uncomfortable.
So let's take a stroll down the street a little bit from the Capitol building, because we talked about the Republicans and the Democrats, but the Department of Justice is still in Democratic control for all intents and purposes in the executive branch. And even ever since Eric Holder proclaimed himself Obama's wingman, it's been weaponized, basically. So those career advancers you warned us about are still making their moves to make the bosses happy for advancement, I guess. Yes.
Yeah, Lee Loftus is the assistant U.S. Attorney General. You've got Lisa Monaco. You know, the assistant Attorney Generals and the Deputy Attorney Generals are running the show. That's who runs it. Merrick Garland's not running the show over there. He likes to hide in his house. He wanted to be a judge. He wanted to be a Supreme Court justice. The people that work on his security detail explained it to me that he doesn't even travel. You know, the AG is a high travel job, generally speaking. It's a cabinet level position that represents the executive on matters of the DOJ. And when those meetings happen, whether they be in Europe or they be around this country, he doesn't go. He doesn't like doing it. And so he hides in his house. So the deep state people that are some politically appointed, but many of them are longtime, you know, DOJ types, of which Chris Wray was one and Jim Baker was one. You know, Jim Baker actually started with DOJ in like 1990.
Comey would never really spend much time in the field either. He was always going to cocktail parties and spending time away.
That's certainly possible. I think people really liked Jim Comey. He's got a cult of personality. So for all of his faults and foibles, and there are plenty, and it seems like he's kind of a narcissistic kind of guy that really believed his own hype, which is really dangerous when you do that. You know, people did like Comey. Like, there were mugs in the FBI field office that said, "Comey is my homie," which is sort of nauseating to those of us who saw afterwards that it seemed like he really took a lot of liberties with what his job was actually supposed to be. But, you know, when he showed up, people loved it. They loved seeing him. They thought he was a great guy. He's very warm. He's very charismatic. Whether he traveled, he wasn't traveling around by the time I got there. He gave me my credentials. So he was the guy that did that. You know, if you look at the picture of me,
they just don't seem like they're managers of a huge, expensive agency for the most part. They seem like what you've been warning us about. They were just ladder climbers who found themselves at the top of that particular thing. Maybe he wanted to be CIA, but Trump won and it wasn't going to happen. He got fired. And just like Christopher Wray, you said, spends more time on vacations and his private plane, which is actually taxpayer funded.
That's our plane, yeah.
Than sitting in the office, getting things done, solving crimes, preventing the next 9/11. Let me read this to you from American Greatness. You probably heard of that website. They had an article by Ken Masugi. Don't know if you know him, but sorry if I got his name wrong. But he wrote, "The FBI as intelligence unit for the administrative state. Today, the heroes are few and outnumbered as the FBI has become the enforcement arm of the Democratic Party, which is the party of government. The corruption was well underway before 9/11 in Watergate. What the reaction to 9/11 added to the administrative state was an arbitrary distinction between life under war and life under peace. That is, we are governed 24/7 by emergency. Yesterday's terrorist attack, today COVID, and tomorrow what? A climate emergency? Turns out it was balloons and aliens and maybe an ecological disaster in Ohio." Do you agree with that pre-post 9/11 analysis?
Yeah, Ken nailed it. And moreover, I'll give it even like in a tighter way for you. The definition of national security radically changed on September 12th, 2001 in this country from its previous, and I may have said this to you last time, but it's worth repeating. The previous definition historically for all of American history has been that the national security means we protect the Constitution and our constitutional republic, and that the American way of life continues. There will be loss of life in that, like many soldiers and airmen and Marines have lost their life doing that. Okay. Sailors as well. I don't want to leave anybody out. So when you talk about that on September 12th, the new rule for national security is no American dies at the hands of terrorists on American soil. That is not an achievable mission, but it is the definition of pre-crime. So when you have a zero anything policy, and you can look at the Chinese with the zero COVID policy, that means you have to weld yourself into your house, you know, start ordering your Netflix up, make sure that your subscriptions are good, order Amazon so the drivers can come drop your stuff off, Uber Eats to your door, and don't come outside because it's too dangerous. And, you know, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a fundamental shift in that. And so the fear climate is part of control. That's how it works. Your amygdala is triggered. You make emotional decisions instead of logical and rational decisions. And when that happens, we get more and more government. And don't worry, the government's going to protect you. No, thank you. I'll protect me. I got rifles in here for me. Nobody's coming to come after me. The Chinese spy balloon is not coming after me. You have to, you know, defend your own information, your own communications, and you should be your own first responder. And then local government best, you know, state government when you need it, federal government, stay the hell out of here. That should be the real animal. And it was, that was the founding of our republic. Unfortunately, we have put things on the government, and the government has happily taken that task, because the government is just a bunch of people who want to make a paycheck with doing the least amount of work possible. Probably like a lot of people, like they don't want to work very hard, and they don't want to do a very good job if they can help it.
Well, more like the DMV and less like the Marines, I guess is what we're saying. And we all want to believe that Jack Ryan is out there saving the day.
No.
Not happening. So
there's no Jack Ryans.
Well, show that there are lawyers and nefarious, the new legal filings show FBI was involved in January 6th debacle per Proud Boy's attorney. Proud Boy Ethan Pac-Man Nordine's attorney, I actually met him once, reveals that prosecutors filed a sealed motion asking the judge to restrict defense questions about FBI confidential sources and their involvement with the group ahead of January 6th. FBI confidential sources were with the Proud Boys during their march and in some of the group's Telegram channels. Sounds like entrapment. Nordine's counsel indicates if the FBI had numerous informants with the Proud Boys in January 6th was a seditious pre-planned conspiracy, which the prosecutors claim, then why didn't they try to stop it?
Because they don't get credit for it if they stop it before it happens. It has to happen. The FBI only gets credit for terrorism when the actual terrorism, the act of terrorism is actually executed. So there's a vested interest by the government in getting funding by showing these what they call dismantlements and disruptions, which are the statistical accomplishments they get when it actually happens. And then they stop it right at the moment. So FBI counterterrorism cases in the United States are now synonymous, and they would be completely indistinguishable by most people from entrapment cases. I will refer you to a book that was written by a guy named Trevor Aronson. He is by no means a right-wing type dude. He is a lefty, and he's a nice man, and he's a good writer. And he did a 15-minute TED talk that people can see. That's the substance of his book. But he also wrote a book that's called The Terror Factory, How the FBI Manufactures Terrorism in This Country. And I'm paraphrasing the second part of it. But The Terror Factory, you can find it. It's like $20 on Amazon. It's a good read. It was considered mandatory reading for my surveillance team because it is the way the FBI executes terrorism cases. Now, he was talking about what he would call black and brown people, jihadi types, foreign terrorist affiliated or homegrown violent extremists. But you can substitute jihadi for white supremacy, and you can substitute black and brown people for ignorant anybody, and then you can get the white supremacy cases. And they're not all white, by the way. Obviously, like the Proud Boys are not a white organization. So when you do that, you get all of the same type of entrapment pieces. And there's even further, and Julie Kelly wrote a piece about it yesterday or the day before, an American Greatest, talking about this document they're using for the seditious conspiracy. And it says it's called 1776 Returns. And you may have heard about it, talked about, but it's this piece that was, one of the cornerstones of the government's case against the five Proud Boys that they said are seditious conspirators. And it was probably written by somebody in the government or a government source. And it was given to the Proud Boys on behalf of the government. So the cornerstone of this so-called conspiracy was actually the federal government, because the government builds terrorism cases. That's what the FBI does. And it's not good. It's terrible.
It's terrible. It's not American, that's for sure.
No, it's not.
It's very Stalin-esque. So you went on Tucker. This is the big thing right now. And I'm excited to be able to talk to you about it. You went on Tucker and warned everyone the FBI tried to manufacture crimes against Catholics. You are a Catholic. I am a Christian. Steve is a Christian. That's against the Bill of Rights, no matter what it is.
Yes.
What makes them target religion? And you produced the internal memo. They ignored Nassar molesting gymnasts even after complaints, but they make up this white supremacy stuff. Why?
So when you're an ideological actor, you're trying to pick winners and losers. In the case of the FBI right now, the sort of the woke type, the leftist activists are trying to pick a winner and loser. And the author of this particular document, in my opinion, was interested in going after Catholics because of their wrong think on abortion and on LGBTQ issues. And it's very straightforward when you read the piece. That's why I produced the actual document. It's available for anyone to read. It's at uncoverdc.com. I wrote a piece on there about Christians and white supremacy. And essentially what they believe, this is what I think was being done here, is they said nobody cares about a thing called radical traditional Catholics. They sourced it with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a trash organization and should not be used. It's actually out of policy for the FBI to use that as a single source for for Intel. And they said essentially that these radical traditional Catholics share common cause in the fields of abortion, LGBTQ issues, anti-immigration stances, and then somehow anti-Semitism, which is weird. I don't think that's real. But allegedly, all of these things gave them common cause with white supremacists, and that's why they would be susceptible to recruitment by white supremacists. And therefore, the FBI should do mitigation tactics, which is to say, introduce confidential human sources into these Catholic churches. That's full crazy. But what it does is it props open the door, not just to radical Catholics, but now to radical Baptists and radical Lutherans and radical evangelicals and radical, you name it, Christians, and then all Christians, because all Christians, more or less, if they are followers of the book, do hold these basic tenets that abortion is not a moral good. It's not one of the sacraments that we should be participating in. And at the very, you know, even if they are tolerant of it, nobody sees it as a good thing. And then same thing with the sort of the gay issues that come down in this country that have
gotten
radical.
Weren't they just kicked out of all the Muslim mosques for doing the exact same discriminatory policies? So they just basically flipped it and said, well, they're not a persecuted group anymore. We can now go after the majority of this country. You know, it reminds me of the Gallatin flag was on a symbols list. They called moms and dads domestic terrorists for yelling at school board meetings when they were upset about dirty books and CRT in the classroom. I mean, this is a it's almost like a pogrom of the majority religion in the country by the premier law enforcement agency of the country, directed by the Department of Justice, which is under the President of the United States. What yes, country are we in?
You know, we're trying to get to China if we can. So the what's crazy is the whistleblower who brought that document to my attention stated very emphatically that if you were to switch the word Catholic with Muslim, you would not be able to produce that document. Right. It would not have flown. It would not have made it past the supervisory intelligence analyst who approved it, and it wouldn't have cleared the legal counsel who also had to approve it. That's the chief division counsel in Richmond. So, you know, here's the thing. It's not that the FBI is embarrassed about what they did, because they retracted the memo, and it's not a memo, it's an intelligence product. So it was actually like a finished analysis. It's a term paper that would have been the seed crystal for growing other documents in that same vein. So there would be a whole body of work about all the, you know, the radical Christians out there. But you're talking about a religion that has 70 million adherents in this country alone. Maybe a billion worldwide.
It's the world's largest, yeah.
You don't get to do that sort of thing, number one. And number two, there's a lot of Catholics in the FBI. So we finally have driven a stake in a place where they can see us like pointing that flag down and saying, okay, I've been talking about things that are wrong. Maybe you didn't have a problem with the you know, parents at school board meetings, but you should have. Maybe you didn't see a problem with the Gadsden flag and the 1835 battle flag from Gonzales. Maybe that wasn't a thing for you, but it should have. You should, you know, maybe you didn't care about the fact that they were calling election crimes on misinformation and disinformation, but these are Catholic churches you're talking about going into, and that's pretty black and white in the Bill of Rights. You got to get smarter about it. And I've had people that I've never talked to before pick up the phone and call me and say, who is that analyst in Richmond, because I want to call and bitch them out, whoever they are. And so you go, okay, I don't have the name and I can't give it to you, but I bet you could find it. And if you want to make a phone call and tell somebody that they blew it, then
yeah,
by all means do so.
We literally have freedom of religion in our Constitution. And so now you definitely outed them with their own memo. So they publicly walked it back now, right? I don't know why Chris Ray hates Christians, but you spelled it out pretty good. But the Southern Poverty Law Center, that's a whole other situation. That has a history of defaming people based on their religion. In June 2018, they had to publicly apologize to Majid Nawaz at the Quilliam Foundation for defaming them as anti-Muslim extremists. The SPLC paid out $3.365 million to Nawaz over that. I wonder how much Catholics and parents will get in taxpayer reparations.
My guess is probably very little. And, you know, that's the thing about people that are generally speaking conservative. They just want to be left alone. And I don't know if this will go anywhere, but what should be happening is the Catholic Bishop Council should be getting very aggressive about letting the FBI where they stand and what's going to happen. And the Thomas More Society should get involved, because there's Catholic lawyers out there doing that. And I think they're going to be a little bit tied up right now with some of the pro-life activists that have been arrested that are Catholic. But that being said, it's on the list. It's on the list of things that need to be done. And, you know, the Bureau needs to be held to account for what it did. The fact of the matter is they were never going to disseminate this publicly, but they would have built, like I said, a body of work on this particular topic to the point where you could justify predicating cases. I think we probably caught this one early enough that we didn't have that, but I don't have visibility to every intelligence product. I don't even work at the FBI anymore. I just have a bunch of friends that do. So I'm grateful that there are people that are willing to expose it, and I'm glad that they don't share their name, and I'm not going to give it up. And I went through torture training in the Air Force, so they can come at me whatever they want. I'm not going to tell them who my sources are. I consider myself a journalist at this point, and that's why I wrote the piece and my own analysis of it. It's like, give me a byline. Let's do this thing. And DOJ should treat me as accordingly. I'm going to continue to expose them whenever they step out of line. And that's the only thing we can really do.
The hilarity in this thing is that the FBI bulletin indicated that opposing abortion is a facet of white supremacy.
Right.
But they didn't pay attention to the fact that Planned Parenthood was created by Margaret Sanger as an attempt to eradicate the black race. So how did all of a sudden did it turn from a civil rights issue?
It's totally illogical. That's how it's called cognitive. That pain that they have in their head that leftists wake up and feel every morning is called cognitive dissonance. That's their thoughts hitting each other at full speed and not making any sense when they go back to the walls. So that is what we're talking about. We're talking about people who can make an illogical leap and say that, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to a Latin mass, if you've ever seen a Latin mass, it's literally what Hollywood puts out there as the stop of that stops the devil in his tracks. When you think about theatrical representations of actual evil incarnate coming at people, they go to the Latin mass and traditional practitioners of Catholicism with the cross, with the thurifer that has the incense, with the holy water, with all the staples that have been around in the Catholic Church for 2000 years, because that's what stops the devil in Hollywood's mind, and probably in reality too. Okay. And so they're going to go and line those people up with anti-Semite and white supremacy because everybody doesn't like abortion. Like, you're a crazy person. You're a full crazy person. The white supremacists in this country that were the KKK used to try to kill Catholics too and Jews, right?
Yeah.
So what are you talking about? Like, that's how we know it's illogical. This is a person that is an academic only.
The FBI said they relied on various sources, but instead they relied on the SPLC, Salon, and the Atlantic magazine owned by Democratic activist Steve Jobs' widow, Lorraine Powell Jobs, who also wants to take our gas stoves away.
Yes.
They aren't working for taxpayers, but leftist oligarchs.
Correct.
It's about as obvious as it gets. It's become a wing of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and I'll put a quick shameless plug in. Our show, I interviewed a woman named Amy Nelson, who's a wonderful human being who was attacked by the DOJ. One of the things I'm doing is I'm exposing DOJ victims, FBI victims. Yeah. And she was the victim of the Amazon, the largest corporation that's running our product world, but also Amazon Web Services, which is actually running all of our federal government's computer systems. And because they have a ton of money, they have direct access to the United States Attorney's Office. And they went in and presented a case and said, we would like one of these people, all five of these people, charged with felonies, including Amy Nelson's husband. And they said, if we can get one of these people to plead guilty to a felony, we are not liable for breaking a contract and paying $100 million in fines. And so they got the DOJ to do their wet work for them. That is Jeff Bezos, who she refers to accurately as an oligarch and a leftist one at that, coming after just individual families in order to basically get his company out of paying a $100 million fine or a penalty in a contract. So they are weaponizing the government. It's not about left
or
right.
Business concerns. Yeah.
Yep. It's people who are using the government for their own private concerns. And a lot of them turn out to be leftists. That's what's really scary. It's not
AWS
necessarily
owning the DOJ computers and the DOD computers. That's a scary thing too. But in what business is it as the FBI that New York City sent fingerprints of fired for being unvaccinated employees to them for tracking and registration? Did all cities do that? And we're only hearing about New York City.
I haven't heard of anybody else doing it. I read the same report you did. Here's what I do know. I made a prediction. I think I made it on your show before, but I'll make it again. And I've been making it everywhere I go, that the FBI's one of their primary interests right now is a group that's called anti-government, anti-authority, violent extremists, AGAAVE, agave with two A's in the middle. And that is people who didn't get the COVID vaccine, people who want to have their own firearms, people who want to make their own decisions about whether their kids go to school and what they learn. These are anti-government, anti-authority. You might recognize them from their ideological connection to the founding fathers of this country. So the anti-government, anti-authority types, which is what the FBI is pushing on, I'm sure that's where that list goes. And they are a mandated in this year, this financial year, a mandated banded threat under the domestic terrorism statute or the domestic terrorism banner or label that the FBI's offices have. Every single office has to say that it's a real problem, and they just have to say how bad, whether it's a 1, 2, or a 3. It's not a possibility that it's not an issue in every AOR. That's nonsense. That's pre-crime, but that's the pre-crime that we're going. That's how you end up with all the teachers that didn't want to get vaxxed, having their fingerprints on file with the FBI.
Wow. And Sebastian Gorka, your friend I know, said on the FBI, this is nothing more than a political police force. It's Biden's Gestapo, which is pretty harsh.
Correct, though.
I have a bunch more questions. Steve, how much time do we have? 1 minute, of course. Okay, well, we're not going to get to any of this, so I definitely have to get you guys back. And it was supposed to be two people. I never would have got to any of it. So let me just see what my most important question to you is. Is there a give, send, go for all the whistleblowers we can help?
Not all of them, but the ones that I'm connected to, they can go to givesendgo.com/Kyle Serafin. It's just my full name. And I'm supporting probably two guys with that. We've passed through, you know, well over $15,000 at this point. And I'm holding on to the rest of it in case they need it. We'll pay legal fees. We'll pay their rent if they're in a bad spot. We've paid travel for them to go and testify in front of Congress. So givesendgo.com/Kyle Serafin is the address for that. And thank you for asking.
Okay. And how about House Republicans demanding all CIA and FBI documents on Jeffrey Epstein? We know they're out there. Will you think we'll ever see that?
No. Do you?
No. I just thought maybe you would break some news or something. I don't know.
Sorry.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much for your time. Always appreciate it. Hope to have you back a third time as soon as possible. We are at the end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and what you're up to.
You can find it at Kyle Serafin on Truth and on Twitter. And you can do Kyle Serafin on the end of the Rumble address, and you'll find our podcast. And you can find The Kyle Serafin Show on Podbean, anywhere that you choose to download podcasts. I found out like some other weird ones, Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, and all that. Apparently Google too. I don't know. There's a Google podcast. So
there
people
is.
Can find it there.
Yep. Right next to the Mill Creek View podcast. All right. Well, there thanks for coming on. God bless you and be well, sir.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. And Steve.
Segment of our show where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what did you think of our first repeat guest, former special agent Serafin?
Well, Kyle is a great guy and he's got a lot of energy. And we found out after the show that he has a little bit of a radio background, started back in when he was 3 years of age. And now he's really being, you know, God is really using that to his advantage to use Kyle to get the message out about what the FBI is doing and what the tyranny of our country is going through or being done to our country. And we need more of him out there. And Steve, you're a perfect example of another individual who's trying to spotlight the tyranny that's taking place in this country. And it's time for us as patriots, oh, I should just say Americans, to stand up and say no to what's
that's right.
being done.
And so Republicans took over the Congress last month, and Jim Jordan is the chairman of the whistleblower, let's just call it, committee that we talked about, even though it's very disappointing out of the gate. We'll see how it goes. But I wanted to play this clip, start the conversation.
Up to House Republican staff on the Judiciary Committee. In fact, one of them is testifying in a transcribed interview as we speak, talking about how the Justice Department is now operating in such a political fashion and manner. Second, you all know about the Twitter files, where we have learned that big tech, big government are colluding to keep information from we the people. The most egregious example took place prior to the 2020 presidential election, where they kept that information from the country just days and weeks before the most important election we have, suppressing a story and limiting Americans' free speech rights. And then finally, third, when I think about the accountability that we plan to bring to this administration, I just think in the broad sense. I mean, everything has gotten worse. In 2 years' time, we went from a secure border to no border. We went from safe streets to record crime. We went from stable prices to record inflation. And of course, as I've said, we have a government that now, I believe, is targeting the very people it is supposed to serve. So we plan on, as a Republican majority, holding them accountable and dealing with what we have seen, and again, what has been exposed from the Twitter files, and of course, what these brave FBI agents who've come to us now as whistleblowers and told us how the Justice Department is operating and how it is not supposed to be functioning in that manner, because it is supposed to be equal treatment under the law in this great country.
We have a government that now, I believe, is targeting the very people it is supposed to serve. Well, we've been witnessing that, haven't we, Steve?
Oh, we have. We have.
So let's hear from the director of the NCSC, Director William Avanina, at the 2020 Aspen Cyber Summit.
Business a long time, going back prior to 9/11, and I saw this type of organizational symbiotic effort after 9/11. This is the first time I've seen it again, where we had, you know, double-digit agencies working together every day, all day, dedicated women and men around the globe, collecting intelligence, driving action, providing real-time information to DHS and FBI, FBI and DHS taking the appropriate action, dealing with social media companies, taking stuff down, and then at the same time, doing really critical offensive measures around the globe, I think was outstanding. I'm really proud. I've said publicly, I think this would be the most important role I've had in my career, and I'm really proud of where we are right now and the success we've had. We did some really daring things the last couple months, both publicly and non-publicly, and I think they've all paid off. You know, I've been in this business a long time, going back prior to 9/11, and I...
In the past 2 years, especially last 6 to 9 months, we've established an integrated, holistic partnership between tech and government. This is the first time I've seen this type of organizational symbiotic relationship since 9/11. He's proud of it. That's what he had to say. Well, somebody who's knows a thing or two about cancel culture seems to be coming around a little bit. Let's hear from Bill Maher.
We're attacked by an army of purifiers called the Red Guard, who went around the country putting dunce caps on people. Yeah, who didn't take to being a new kind of mortal being. A lot of pointing and shaming went on. Oh, and about 1 million dead. And the only way to survive was to plead insanity for the crime of being insufficiently radical, then apologize and thank the state for the chance to see what a piece of shit you are, and of course submit to re-education, or as we call it here in America, freshman orientation.
Yeah.
Right? So I just have this clip here, this news story. It was over before he knew it. Bill Maher, host of the hit show Politically Incorrect on ABC, was canceled by the network's parent company, Disney, with no real explanation back in June 2002. It wasn't the ratings. Maher's show was many things, raw, outrageous, ridiculous, interesting, and irritating, but it was never boring. Indeed, it was an extremely entertaining show, and conversations happened on his set that didn't happen anywhere on television, for better or worse. The idea of the show was simple. Bring people from all walks of American life and culture together, sports, politics, and entertainment, and let the guests go at it on the topics of the day. Better still, Maher worked hard to include diverse viewpoints too, and regularly include up-and-coming conservative stars like Ann Coulter, Laura Ingraham, and others. Disney, it turns out, handed Maher his death sentence for comments he made on his show on September 17, 2001, on the set that fateful and fatal night was conservative author Dinesh D'Souza, who responded to President George W. Bush's contention that the terrorists responsible for the carnage were cowards. D'Souza disagreed. One of the themes we hear constantly is that the people who did this are cowards, explained D'Souza. Not true. You have a whole bunch of guys who were willing to give their lives. None of them backed out. All of them slammed themselves into pieces of concrete. Maher agreed with D'Souza's point, and what he said next unleashed the firestorm that would end his show. We have been the cowards lobbying cruise missiles from 2,000 miles away, Maher said. That's cowardly. Staying in the airplane when it hits the building. Say what you want about it. It's not cowardly. All right. Well, he knows a thing or two about cancel culture. He was one of the earliest victims of it.
Yes,
let's
sir.
Hear...
Jail time.
What was that, sir?
D'Souza. He had to serve jail for calling, you know, for doing something.
Yes, he had some campaign finance irregularities, or at least that's what he was accused of, and he did do some time. So yep. Cancel culture is a vicious thing, and we just talked to Kyle Serafin about exactly that inside the FBI. So shifting gears slightly, but same topic, let's listen to clip number 4.
Oh, Huckleberries, today I wanted to introduce you to a new friend in our class. Well, this huckleberries is my friend Nash. It's their first day in our class. They're just looking around at all of you, and they're so curious to know who you all are.
Today was fun. It was really interesting, though, knowing going in, being like, I don't know what questions kiddos are going to have or what they're going to say, which is both like nerve-wracking, but also kind of exciting. It's that place of not knowing as a teacher and just being okay with that.
And the friend likes to ask the question, are you a boy or a girl? And Nash answers, I'm just a kid.
But kids can be boys or
girls. They can be boys or girls.
Or
yeah.
Or maybe non-binary.
Yeah.
It was just like, non-binary, yeah. That's just something that we know. And this is something, I mean, it's like, they're 4 and 5 years old, and they just didn't make a big deal out of being a boy or a girl.
And I think it was a huge testament to how much we've been talking about it in the classroom that you never mentioned the term non-binary. It was a child who brought that up because it's constantly in conversation.
Yeah, just like me. So Nash, just like me, is non-binary. So they aren't sure if they're a boy or a girl. So when people ask them, are you a boy or a girl? Right now they just feel like saying, I'm a kid. They're figuring it out.
What?
That's all I can take of that, Steve. I want to vomit.
Yeah, right?
I want to vomit.
They said when the teachers were around, it just organically came out. But then we saw on video her saying, like me, he's binary. So I'm sure the conversation was had. Anyway, that's what's happening in the schools. Those are 4 or 5 year olds. It's absolutely outrageous. But that's a teacher resource video containing gender ideology that was shown to North Carolina daycare workers. North Carolina used to be a red state. Yep. The full video is on the website of the North Carolina Association for the Education of Young Children, NCAEYC. The documentary's title is Reflecting on Anti-Bias Education in Action, The Early Years. So who or what is NCAEYC? NCAEYC describes itself as the state affiliate of the National Association of the Education of Young Children. We are a member association for anyone who is concerned with the development and education of children ages birth through 8. The NCAEYC website says NCAEYC has over 3,000 members across the state and NAEYC has nearly 100,000 members across the country. NCAEYC goes on to describe its members as teachers, childcare providers, administrators, directors, researchers, college faculty, education coordinators, quality enhancement specialists, and other early childhood professionals. Boiled down, it's a nonprofit that appears to be focused on equity. NCAEYC has over 3,000 members across the state, and NAEC has over 100,000 members across the country. Promotes high-quality early learning for all children, birth through age 8, by connecting practice, policy, and research. We advance a diverse, dynamic early childhood profession and support all who care for education and work on behalf of young children, reads the NCAEYC mission statement. There are more than 1 million non-binary adults in the U.S., a first-of-its-kind study found. Approximately 1.2 million people live in the U.S. identify as non-binary, according to a new study by the Williams Institute at UCLA School of Law. Of those 1.2 million people, the majority are under 29 years old, and more than half of non-binary adults are white, at approximately 58%, but 16% are multiracial, 15% are Latinx, 9% are Black, and 2% are AAPI, which is American Islanders, or belong to other groups, the study said. So Steve, 1.2 out of 334,331,000 people, or 0.004%, a lot of fuss for very few people.
Broken, Steve, very broken people.
Do you believe there are 1.2 million non-binary people in America?
Actually, I do not.
Me either. Do you know how many homeless there are?
Oh, I don't know. A couple million?
580,000, about half that non-binary number.
And here we are thinking that was, I thought it was like a couple million. Boy, do we think things when they're not true, do we?
280,000 whites, 230,000 blacks, 130,000 Hispanics. So it definitely hits all people. But Yep. Do you know how many make up the prison population in federal, state, local, and tribal systems?
2.5 million.
Almost 2 million. Yeah, 0.006%. Last quiz. I know I didn't prepare you for this, so it's unfair, but how many people were working for federal, state, and local governments in the United States in 2021?
Probably 20 million or more.
Good. 21.13 million people, or 6.3%. I find that fascinating. Hope you do too.
22 million that work for the medical industry. I
There you
know that
go.
stat.
So there's 12 point percent of the country in those two versus
That's it.
0.004% of the non-binaries taking up all of the space in our children's classrooms. Let's play clip number five.
Today, I want to address the news that the World Surf League has officially made the rule that male-bodied individuals known as transgender athletes can officially compete in the women's division. The World Surf League says they are following the Olympic guidelines. While I address this issue, I want to be clear that I strive to have love for all of mankind, regardless of any differences. But this concerns me as a professional athlete that has been competing in the World Surf League events for the past 15 plus years, and I feel that I must speak up and stand up for those in position that may feel that they cannot say something about this. I think many of the girls currently on tour are not in support with this new rule, and they fear being ostracized if they speak up. So here I go. Questions I have that I want to consider with you. How is this rule playing out in other sports like swimming, running, MMA? Have any of the current surfers in the World Surf League been asked what their thoughts, opinions are on this new rule before it was passed or announced? Should there be a conversation with the 17 women and all of the men on tour prior to a rule change such as this? Is a hormone level an honest and accurate depiction that someone indeed is a male or female? Is it as simple as this? Who is pushing for this huge change? Does this better the sport of surfing? Is this better for the women in surfing? If so, how?
Wow.
That's Bethany Hamilton, lost her arm to a shark, made famous in a movie, Pro Surfer. She has previously used her platform to speak out about transgender issues in sport, and in her latest video raised concerns about what she called male body dominance in other women's sports, such as running and swimming. I think it's really hard to imagine what the future of women's surfing will be like in 15 to 20 years down the road if we move forward allowing this major change, she said. My hope is that if I ever had a daughter who is competing in surfing or any sport, and also for all the aspiring young generation of women to have a bright and promising opportunity in her ambition to be the best of the best women in her sport. What do you think, Steve?
Well, and she has lost an arm. She lost it years ago, and she has competed with a missing arm, and she never complained about being given special rights. She competed just exactly as she was, woman against woman. She did not compete against a man. And I think if you're going to have these mixed, whatever you want to call people that have gone this route, then they have to have a separate competition strictly for those who have transitioned one way or another. They have to have a separate league for that group. For every
All right.
sport,
and
needs
let's
to
hear
be separate.
From the let's hear from the world's largest entertainment company, and we'll take it home.
This country was built on slavery, which means slaves built this country. Tilled this land from sea to sea to sea. First it was rice, tobacco, sugar cane.
Then Whitney did his thing and cotton became king.
And we were its soldiers,
4 million strong.
Fighting for America's freedoms, even though we remained America's
slaves.
Built this country, the descendants of slaves continue to build it.
Slaves built this country.
And we, the descendants of slaves in America, have earned reparations for their suffering.
And continue to earn reparations every moment we spend submerged in the systemic prejudice, racism, and
white supremacy
that America was founded with and still has not atoned for.
Slaves built this country.
Not only field hands, but carpenters, masons,
blacksmiths, musicians, inventors built cities from Jamestown to New Orleans, Savannah County.
Washington,
Washington.
40 acres and a mule.
We'll take the 40 acres, keep the mule.
We made your families rich.
From the southern plantation heirs.
To the northern bankers.
To the New England ship owners.
The founding fathers.
Former presidents.
Current senators.
The Illuminati, the New World Order.
Slaves built this country.
We had Tubman.
Turner.
Frederick D.
Then they say Lincoln freed the slaves.
But slaves were men.
And women.
And only we can free ourselves.
Emancipation is not freedom.
Jim Crow, segregation, redlining, public schools feeding private prisons, where we become slaves again.
As we celebrate Juneteenth
for the umpteenth time,
our account is still outstanding.
Cause this country was built on slavery, which means
slaves built this country.
And we demand our 40 acres and a mule.
Bump that!
You can keep the mule.
Keep the 40.
We're taking our freedom.
That's on the Disney Channel. So kids are free to watch whatever they want to watch, but there are lies in there. They say that Lincoln did not free the slaves, but that is a animated cartoon for children. Disney's Woke Crusade Has Gone Too Far by Julie Burchill, Newsweek. One of the most extraordinary features of the culture wars or cancel culture, as those who have been on the sharp end of the woke trial pitchforks call it, is that organizations who wake up late to wokeness will invariably court the favor of those who are not their natural audience at the expense of those who are. Thus, we see a company as long beloved as Disney now abandoning its core family audience and instead catering to every whim demanded by the woke mob, a move both ineffective and, as we are seeing, unprofitable. Why do we do it? Well, many of the entertainment, media, and publishing bosses class will be exactly the sort of people who will have spawned the sort of overprivileged, underemployed offspring who drive this cultural dance of death. I know feminists who live in fear of their gender-fluid children, and while in public, they may wave the attractive suffragette colors of purple, white, and yellow. At home, they're trussed up tight in the sickly shades of the trans rights flag, tiptoeing around the giant toddlers who strictly instruct their mild-mannered wage slaves to respect their pronouns. A lot of those who run entertainment corporations would sign their own death warrant if they thought it would get them a pat on the head from the wokerati, a midlife crisis now disguised as a crusade. Getting down with the kids, staying relevant, is always a cringeworthy look, but one should never underestimate the desire of the jaded middle-aged executive to feel the spry sparkle of youthful idolism once again. Even at the backlash begins, with many people canceling their Disney Plus subscriptions. Clearly, they are starting to conclude that if the corporation wants to cater to the most outspoken and yet most censorious elements of society, they can do it on someone else's buck. Julie Burchill is a journalist and author of Welcome to the Woke Trials, How Identity Killed Progressive Politics, published Academia Press. In the meantime, Disney will lay off 7,000 employees even after forcing them to take the experimental COVID vaccine. Brianna Morello, former Fox Business, Newsmax, and MLB producer turned independent journalist, fired for not getting vaccinated, by the way, Disney is laying off 7,000 of its employees and rewarding its shareholders. While this is necessary to address the challenges we're facing today, I do not make this decision lightly. I have enormous respect and appreciation for the talent and dedication of our employees worldwide, and I'm mindful of the personal impact of these changes. Iger recently returned to Disney in November after the board fired its former woke CEO, Bob Chapek. Now the irony in all of this is that Disney forced its employees to get the experimental COVID vaccine. Disney fired any employee that disobeyed their mandatory requirements for all salaries and non-union hourly employees to participate in this experiment. For those that lost their jobs over refusing to take the jab, this is still a sober moment. Standing up for their medical freedom cost them their Disney careers. It's important to note that Iger also announced to his shareholders that the company will be resuming dividend payments. Now that the pandemic impacts to our business are largely behind us, he said, we intend to ask the board to approve the reinstatement of a dividend by the end of the calendar year. Our cost-cutting initiatives will make this possible. And while initially it will be modest dividend, we hope to build upon it over time. Iger is rewarding his shareholders while sacrificing his employees. Way to go. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Agent Seraphin, the last American hero. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper and mcview.us. Stay tuned for the greatest national anthem rendition at a Super Bowl ever. And as always, peace in our time. Oh, see, can you see?
twilight has gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars.
Hair's going up on the back of
the head. For the ramparts we walked were so gallantly streaming, and rockets red glare, the bombs burned, singing air.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.